And welcome to Talking Puck TV. Tom Callahan, Mike Haynes here with you. A reminder, this is a tape-delayed broadcast as the Super Bowl's going on right now. I don't even know if we could say that, Mike, without being thrown completely off the air because of advertising rights. But there's a football game on. And we know that. So Mike and I are getting out of the way early. We did toy with the idea of messing with everybody and congratulating the winning teams.
Congratulations, too.
But
make your bet.
That's right. We look so good right now. But we're gonna get in. We got a lot of stuff, Mike. We want to talk about.
It's a laundry list today. I mean, we toyed with the idea. We went, well, you know, should just take the Sunday off and just enjoy that football game like everybody else in the country is going to do. But Don, there's too much. There's too much juicy stuff going on in the NHL. And I'm not even talking about on the ice necessarily. There's juicy stuff going on off the ice right now in the NHL.
There really is. There's so much. So, Mike, I guess the big place to start has got to be with the coaching changes. So we'll go there, but we're also going to talk about Boston. Tuukka Rask retires. Brad Marchand suspended. A couple other suspensions coming down. Cammy Granato ends up in Vancouver. What else did we have here? We've got just so much going on. Craig Berube's extension in St. Louis. Plus, there's still games being played. I mean, there's a lot. Right.
Well, the Coyotes.
Arena.
In this gigantic arena of 5,000 seats. And now it's been okayed, but we'll get into the details of whether this will still even happen or not. So if that's but all this stuff is going on. The races are heating up, that sort of thing. At some point, maybe the next few weeks, we'll really start digging into the trade deadline that's going to be coming and how that's going to affect things. But it's kind of been a week of just happenings off the ice that are really interesting to both of us.
That's it. So let's go ahead and start with the head coaching vacancy. So the first things that happened this week, Marty St. Louis comes in as the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, Dominique Ducharme out, and barely making me the winner of the Who Gets Fired Next, because right after that, Dave Tippett goes in Edmonton, and then we end up with Jay Woodcroft coming in and taking over in Edmonton. So I've got thoughts on both of these guys, Mike, but let's start. I think Montreal has to be the bigger surprise as far as who they're bringing in, doesn't it? I mean, all of a sudden, Marty St. Louis, zero coaching experience at the pro level. Is the guy.
He's also got Vincent LeCavalier coming with him.
Right, too. AGM, that's right.
So a couple of former Lightning guys who have no experience, basically, at the NHL level coaching. Now, certainly you can look at the resume and go, these were tremendous players, great, great hockey players. But is it just simply is there no other French-Canadian that has hockey coaching experience available, or are these guys just being brought in to get through the rest of the season and the search is on now? And if that's the case, if you're Montreal, you don't want to be like the Dolphins and being accused of tanking, but you don't want to win this season. You want that number one pick or the lottery, the chance to get it. So why not just stay with what you have, save the money on you have to pay a fired coach. Now you got to pay these two guys. I'm sure they're not coming in for nothing. And so it didn't make any sense to me, unless the only thing I could think of, and I'm not in the locker room, Tom, but is it a case where it is just so toxic right now in the locker room? The coaches know these guys are smart enough. They know they're not going to be around after the season. Is it just so bad they had to do something? Otherwise, this makes no sense to me.
Well, so if I'm going to attempt to defend St. Louis from a coaching standpoint, it's more about development. It's more about the respect and the cachet he brings with his Stanley Cup, with his, I made it as a small guy in a time when small guys didn't make it. He's got that underdog story that he could tell and parlayed it into a very good NHL career. It's not like he was just a fringe fourth line guy. He was a star.
He really was.
And as a skill guy, I think the thought is that maybe Ducharme didn't have that. And I guess thinking about it, if you're the Canadians and you look at Ducharme going out and you think, Perhaps the players would respect more someone, and this can be the case. Players may not respect a coach who was not a guy who is a player at that or above that level. And so maybe they're going to try this. Look, it feels like a reach from outside the organization, but he ticks a lot of other boxes. Stanley Cup experience as a player, not a coach, but still a Stanley Cup. He's a winner. He mm-hmm. is a guy who is a Francophile and mm-hmm. has yeah. that Montreal, province of Quebec. Everybody looks at him and goes, we love this guy. Like, there's a lot of goodwill towards him. It's a feel good hire. When it comes to X's and O's, maybe that falls more on the assistants. Maybe you're going to rely more on some other people for that, at least until you really kind of get it going, because there's going to be things he's been on an NHL bench for a long, long time, just not in a suit and tie. Walking back there, he's going to have to learn on the job. But the other thing is, Mike, is he has the grace of time. He does not have to do anything right away. In fact, as you just mentioned so astutely, Montreal would prefer if he didn't. So he's got some time. There's no real rush for him to have to come out and be a winner. And in his first game, certainly was not. So, you know, Montreal doesn't look much different, but he's had very little time to do anything. But when it comes to what's he going to implement, power play, penalty kill, is he going to get really involved in special teams, or is he going to sit back, look at the systems, try to figure out what to do? I have no idea. But if I'm going to try to defend him as a coaching hire, I think this is, if you want to take a look and maybe see if this is the guy for you, you give him the rest of this season to see if he can learn real fast on the job. If not, it is no small, it's not a shame, it's not a problem to say, we're going to remove the interim tag, bring in another head coach, but Marty, we want you as a skills coach. We want you as an assistant coach. We want you to work on the power play, something like that. I think bringing him in, giving him that shot, what's the worst thing that happens? It doesn't quite work out, and you're going to hire a new guy in the offseason anyway. I don't think it's a bad move.
The only thing I would say is, what does it say about the skill to be a head coach in the National Hockey League? Just because you played doesn't mean that you can coach, Wayne Gretzky. If
ooh, subtle. I
know. But I saw firsthand one coach who never played in the NHL, Bob Hartley, win a Stanley Cup, and another guy who had a few cups of coffee, was never a long time in Mark Crawford, win Stanley Cups. But though both those guys spent a lot of time, Hartley especially, in youth hockey, juniors, American Hockey League, learning how to coach. And Ken Hitchcock comes right to my mind, a guy who spent a long time learning how to coach. I've seen guys come in, and I saw it in Denver, where guys who were hired who had never been a coach before, and I don't want to say his name because I really like him, but there was so much talk about how he was just frozen on the ice. He couldn't comprehend. Things happened too fast as a coach in terms of line matchups, just getting the right guys out there, things happening. It takes a while to know how to coach. And I get what you're saying. It's a nice PR move. But I don't think it looks good if you hire him, and I hope it works out. He's a tremendous guy, and it is a feel-good story. It'd be great if it worked. But, boy, there are a lot of guys in that Quebec area who have coached for a long time and would be great coaches. But, and if it doesn't work, Tom, now you go, well, you know what? We made it. Now, your first real move, you've made a mistake. What message is that sending if it doesn't work out? I'm playing devil's advocate.
Sure.
Just that I do. You've been around enough coaches at all different levels of hockey. I'm sure you've seen the same thing I've seen. There are guys who are just good coaches. They work at it. It's right. Hard. It's not easy to coach a hockey game because of the way that the game is played. And I'm sure you've seen guys that get handed a job and it doesn't work.
Yeah, and I will say this, Mike, and you made a great point about trying to plug a guy in. Here's the thing. Of all the franchises, Montreal is the most unique when it comes to qualifications. Montreal is that one place where you almost have to do something different because of the unwritten rules of must have, you know, plenty of French speakers around, which is understandable given the culture and just the demographics of the province. And I don't begrudge Montreal that. Good for them. That's their tradition. That's what they carry. That's what they love. But I think that when you go to make a hire like this, again, with an organization that's floundering, maybe if you reach outside the box, that is exactly what you can say if you're Jeff Gorton come the offseason, if it does not even look like it's remotely going to work. If he's completely struggling as a head coach, if he does look completely lost out there, you can say, you know what, we went outside the box. We wanted to see if we could do something different in an era where a lot of people complain about, well, you're just, it's the same old NHL retread. It's this guy again. It's this guy again. You know, same guys keep getting, I mean, Babcock's name even came up for Edmonton, and we'll talk about Edmonton in a minute. But this is an outside the box move. So I give them credit for having even the fortitude to try it. But looking at Montreal, for me, it is a special case scenario where indeed, again, they may not necessarily want to win, but they may want to try a few things with this half season they have, and maybe they find a diamond in the rough. And Marty St. Louis does learn. He's got to be a smart guy. He was a smart player. So he's no dummy, but I also agree that just because you coach doesn't, or play, doesn't mean you can coach. Nope. And a lot of times, I mean, you know, we talk about in baseball, catchers make the best managers and that kind of thing. And I think everybody sees the game different. So depending on how he sees it, if he's good with younger players, if he's good with the development, that's more what Montreal needs right now than anything else. They need to take these guys. I mean, look at Cole Caulfield, completely disappeared this year. Looked really good last year in limited stretches, and we're like, oh, small sample size, but looks really good. And nothing out of him this year. Struggling so hard. Went to the American League. You know, that's a guy they need to be a home run. And maybe someone like Marty St. Louis can make that happen for them. So Montreal, outside the box move, but you know what? They're not looking for immediate success anyway. They want as good a draft pick position as they can get.
I just found it interesting. You not only hired St. Louis, but you also brought another guy in who has no experience in Vincent LeCavalier.
Right.
And you know, again, another smart player, very talented player, and checks off a lot of those boxes that you said. But sure, you brought in two guys that don't have any coaching experience at the NHL. Just was, I don't know. It was interesting to me that I hope it works, but boy, that's, you're asking two guys to come in, and they had played for, you know, a lot of coaches. I'm sure they, you know, they certainly know the game much better than I know it, but there is a real skill to coaching, and it's more than just getting along with players, especially as a head coach. Boy, it's a, There's the preparation, the hours these guys put in now. It's different than it used to be. These guys put in tremendous hours.
Right.
A lot of video watching. It is, I sometimes wonder if we go through the list of who the best coaches are. I've seen enough really talented players not be good coaches, I think, for a variety of reasons, but some of them are, the game came easier to them, harder to explain it to people who can't do what they could do. Also, their hours. I mean, these guys, you know, we know what the players' lives are like. They're, you know, they skate in the morning, they nap, you know, they're fed, you know, the food comes to them, the travel's easy, you get all the time, you know, a lot of free time. It's now you're asking these superstars to come in. And hey, I hope they're willing to do it, and they, I'm sure they understand, but it's a whole different animal too, Tom, when all of a sudden you're working 16, 18 hours a day for these games, when these are guys who didn't have to put those kind of hours in as a player.
And you know, Mike, it's interesting that you you talk about the commitment and the level, and nobody, mm-hmm. I'm not going to question whether or not he will do it.
He might. I hope he does.
But what I'm going to say to kind of augment what you're saying is that when I look at former players who jump in, generally they have then gone on to be the assistant. And okay, so mm-hmm. let me relate mm-hmm. this to broadcasting really quickly, because this is how I felt. Anyone who's ever interned for me, and if any of you are watching the show, you know this. If you've interned for me or you've worked with me in a professional capacity, I am prepared. You need to be prepared. How do you get prepared? By learning both sides of the job. If you want to be on the air, Mike, you don't just show up and pick up a microphone. You learn how to set up a gear. I send kids to the radio station to go learn how to run the board. So that they know on the other end, okay, when something melts down and it's a computer problem or it's a problem for the board op or for whoever's running the show, or maybe your pregame show host is having an issue, you have to know how to fix that or at least know where it comes from. Because if you know, so kind of, you know, how the stew is made, if you will, you understand the ingredients that go into it. So you can look at it and go, oh, this is what's missing. So that, I think, is maybe where St. Louis is at a disadvantage. He's not going to necessarily know what's missing. He'll be able to taste it and go, something's wrong, but not entirely be sure what it is. And that's the learning on the job. He's going to have to really quickly figure these things out. And hopefully they do surround him with some people who can tap him on the shoulder and go, hey, this, you know, look at this, look at that. And if he's open to learning, maybe it works, but it is. It's a curious hire in the short. Honestly, I'm going to label this a PR hire in the short term with hope. That's really what it is. This is to kind of distract a little bit from just how terrible this team is on the ice. That's what it is.
Well, we'll certainly be watching and reading about this, and I hope it does work for him. You know, that'd be great. Look, the league is better when Montreal is winning and their fans are excited, and there's a lot of Canadian fans throughout Canada and in the U.S. And when they're doing well, I think that's good for the game. So I'm hoping that they do have some success.
I agree. And speaking of another Canadian team now, Mike, four of the seven NHL teams in Canada have replaced their head coach this year. Edmonton, right after that, Dave Tippett goes. Tippett's more surprising for me from a standpoint of he started out so well with this group, and all of a sudden they just started sliding. But let me say this before I lob the softball to you. I look at Tippett, I look at that roster, and I always, from the beginning, scratched my head and said, I don't see the fit here. And I'm not saying he couldn't have gotten them to win, but I just didn't see it. You have a high-flying offensive roster and a defensive-minded coach. I didn't know how that was going to work.
Well, it hasn't.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
but they got off to such a great start this season. That's I think where some of this, that's where a lot of the angst is coming. If they had started off really poorly and just went, okay, this just isn't working. But the fact that it was so good at the beginning of the season. Now, if you put the magnifying glass, you go, well, they were really living and dying on that power play. And when that stopped, they stopped winning. You have two of the best players in the NHL. And if you shut them down, you're not going to win. You don't have your goaltending's a mess. Your defensive play has not been good. I mean, for a guy, you said you talked about classifying Tippett in that defensive mind, but that wasn't happening. The team wasn't playing well in their own zone a lot of times. And maybe that's just the goaltending. But and here's a case, we just talked about St. Louis, but here's a case where, you know, your assistant coach, your coach is going to, here's a guy who has paid his dues, if you will, to become a coach, and he's getting an opportunity. I like that. And as you said, they didn't just, bring in another retread, but boy, I believe I have this stat correct. I'm sure somebody will tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure about this. Edmonton, and I want to say in the last 15 years, has had more coaching changes than any other team in the NHL.
Not surprising. Mm-hmm. Not surprising. Wow. But sad. Because
it is. It is for their fans.
Look at the talent they have had and the top draft picks they have had.
Yes. Yes. Well, they haven't drafted well. I mean, McDavid,
well, McDavid and Draisaitl are good, but other than that, there's a lot of questions.
Oh, it's a lot of questions. Oh, they've made some terrible picks. And talk about that all the time. Why is Florida has gone from a floor mat to maybe the best team in the NHL? They didn't miss on three picks.
Right.
Huberto, Ekblad, and Barkov didn't miss. They didn't miss on them. And your whole franchise turns around. You can look at Chicago, did the same thing. They turned things around. Pittsburgh didn't miss. When you miss like Edmonton, you're struggling and you're changing coaches, you're changing strategy. And I know I've said this to Blue in the face, but right now McDavid is in the prime of his career. He has 3 years where he's in his prime. He's right in the middle of it right now in the terms of age. And you're going to throw away another year on McDavid. I'm not getting into the playoffs probably. Or if you do, you're not going anywhere in the playoffs right now, unless they make some great trades. They get Flurry, or they do something at the trade deadline that can change this team, or this coach has got some ideas and gets them going. But otherwise, Tom, you've thrown away another year of the best player in the NHL.
Well, here's the other thing, too, Mike, is that they've now lost Zach Cassian. They've now lost Duncan Keith, although Keith actually helps them to stash that money on long-term IR. But those guys, Cassian's a loss for them. And, I mean, who knows? But here's the other thing. I don't want to let Jay Woodcroft coming in. I do want to talk about Woodcroft because I think this is a good, solid hire. But how are we not questioning once again the general manager of the Edmonton Oilers? It doesn't matter to me whether it was McTavish, Shirelli, or now Holland. And I don't know what's going on. It's got to be something when you get to Edmonton that that you just kind of lose your marbles when it comes to this. But how is Mike Smith for 2 years the signing you make to shore up your goaltending? How? Just look at his injury. I'm not even talking about his numbers. Just look at his injury history, and you know he's not going to be there for 20 games in an 82-game season minimum. Right. So I don't understand how that's your signing. Plus, his age is completely working against him. The odds are greater that it's going to be more this season and next season. So I don't understand that signing. I don't understand eating the Duncan Keith contract. I don't understand bringing that on board when you know you need defensive help. So you trade for a guy who is, again, older, 37, broken down physically, is not as durable as he was. And you're not getting 27-year-olds in on this. You signed a 40—Mike Smith is 41, I think, now. His age finally matches his number. It's just, you know, where are we? Or he'll be 41 at the end of the contract, one or the other. But my point is, you're not improving this team. You're aging it. Maybe you thought, oh, I need veteran experience here, but there's other ways to go about it. I don't understand. I don't even think the problem is coaching in Edmonton. I think it's in the front office, and it's been in the front office for 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
No, this is not new.
We talked about how they've had more coaching changes. It's been a revolving door, not just general manager, but presidents, just leadership in the front office has been a constant change. You know, it's a franchise that when they started in the NHL was so good. You can make a case. You can say this is without a doubt one of the top five teams that's ever existed in the NHL, right? Right. Sure. In the Gretzky era. The bar was set so high, so early, and you just immediately got a great fan base, excitement about hockey. You had coach who was there for a long time. You had a general manager that was there for a long time. You had consistency. That group of players stayed together, that real core, until Gretzky was traded. And then things started changing. But for a long time, there was a real core to that. The fans there must just be going, what in the world is, you know, and you're never, ever going to have, and not in today's NHL, you're never going to have that kind of team again. But boy, this is, it has been a beating on these fans there in Edmonton for 15 years now.
Yes, I feel bad. And I do want to talk quickly about Woodcroft, Mike. This is a guy who I know a lot of people are saying who. But he has over 1,000 games being on an NHL coaching staff. Now, a lot of that was being on an NHL video staff. He was a video coach. But here's a couple of pluses for him. Number one, he was also their Bakersfield AHL head coach and has shown success not only in leading that team, but also in generating players who turned into NHL-ready prospects. So that's important to them. Yes. Number two, so he's in the system. He knows the younger guys. That's a plus. But also now, he was in Detroit. Ken Holland knows him. There's a comfort there. And plus, he does have the resume. And again, I mean, remind me of how many NHL games Scotty Bowman played in, you know? You know, Jay Woodcroft is a guy who you're not like, oh, he was an NHL superstar. Well, no, of course he wasn't. But the point is he's been coaching for a long time now, and he's earned his shot. And I think that this is the exact opposite of a Marty St. Louis hire.
This is
someone who has learned how to coach. And I've got my fingers crossed for the Oilers that they finally have the right guy, at least behind the bench. He's not going to be able to control what Kenny Holland does at the deadline or at the draft or any of that. But he can take what he's got and try to coalesce that into more of what they had at the beginning of the year. So I think this is a solid hire, an experienced guy, even though he hasn't had that NHL head coach pedigree, he's earned his way here.
Yeah, and I think at least it's a different scenario, obviously, than Montreal's, but it's also different than Vancouver, where you're bringing in a guy completely out of the organization.
Right.
This is a guy who players are going to be familiar with. It's been around. I think this is a little gentler change there in Edmonton, and maybe that's what they need right now. Because I know I keep saying it, but you just don't want to waste these years with Tyson McDavid. You don't want to turn around and go, well, he's now 30. We finally got the team together that we want. You know, he's not going to be the same player. You just can't be. So this is your time if you're Edmonton. You can't blow it with the best player and not get into the playoffs with an opportunity to advance in the playoffs.
I agree.
So, all right, we'll keep an eye on both of those, and we'll be, you know, by the end of the year, we're able to compare and go, superstar versus somebody never played, who's the better coach?
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a break here. We still have Boston to talk about, Vancouver, the Berube extension, and what's going on in Vegas as well with Mark Stone. So Mike and I'll step aside for a sec. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, it's Tom. I just wanted to tell you about a couple of programs I use every single week, whether I'm putting this podcast together or doing something for Talking Puck TV on Sunday nights. 4kdownload.com has some great things, and I'm going to tell you about here. First of all, it's 4K video to MP3. I use this all the time. I take the audio out of a video file that I've recorded. Couldn't be simpler. You just add the file and it pulls it out into an MP3 file. Boom. And that's what I do these podcasts in, is an MP3 file. Could not be easier. There's a 4K video download as well, which is a tremendously useful tool, whether you're trying to grab snippets of things perhaps you've done or have seen online. You can also then, once you download that video, guess what? Pick the audio out of it if you want to use it that way as well. They also have programs that work with your Instagram and other social media as well. This helps if you want to do TikTok, if you do Vimeo, Tumblr, SoundCloud, Twitch, like we do. There's a lot of applications, YouTube. So just if you're interested, give it a shot. Here's a link for you to try it out. It's bit.ly/4kpuck. That's bit.ly/4kpuck. Yes, that's the number 4kpuck. All right, back to the show. All right, welcome back on Talking Puck TV. Tom Callahan, Mike Haynes here with you. Great chance for us to mention we are tape delayed tonight because of the football game. So Mike and I are getting to the issues of the day. Still running the show, and maybe you've already heard this on the podcast. By the way, if you like the podcast, you like the show, please follow, like, subscribe. And we are now available on more platforms. Not only are we available on YouTube and Twitch, as we have been the last couple seasons, but now we've expanded. Facebook Live is a great place to find us, even on LinkedIn and on Twitter. So thanks for being here with us. We very much appreciate it. But yeah, we're not monitoring the chat tonight. Don't worry. There's plenty to talk about, as always.
We've already said some controversial things, so you can people can yell and scream next
Absolutely.
Week.
Absolutely. We can take it. We got big shoulders.
Let the anger build and boil all week.
That's right.
And unleash it on us next Sunday.
That's right. All right, well, let's talk. We'll come back to some more coaching stuff. We'll get to Berube, I think. But I want to talk about some actual stuff going on right now with Vegas and Boston. So let's start with Boston. Tuukka Rask retires. And some people are asking if he's a Hall of Famer. I have thoughts on that. And then Brad Marchand, 6-game suspension, Mike, for just buffoonery.
Just punching. He just punched Jury.
And then he speared him in the face.
I think he was. I don't know if he was trying to get him in the face. When you watch the video, it looked like he just. Because I think Jari was doing something with his, like, oh, I have the puck. I made that save. You know what I mean? I think he antagonized. You could see Jari said something and kind of waved the puck at him. And then Marchand snapped and went to hit his glove or something.
Did you hear what precipitated all this?
But then it hit him in the face. Well, the only thing I just saw the video of, you know, Jari made a couple of really good saves.
Okay, this.
Yeah,
but this goes back to warm up. Here's the story behind the story.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
Tell me.
So if there is video of this, but what happened was, so the game is on the road. Pittsburgh is in Boston. Mm-hmm. Jari picks up a puck in warmups on his stick, or it's maybe it's during the game. He was going to flip a puck to a fan over the glass. Mm-hmm. And Marchand goes by, slaps the puck off his stick that Jari was going to flip over the glass, takes the puck and skates away with it, and then he throws it at one of the shovel guys who was out. So maybe it was early in the game. But Jari was upset by that because he was just going to give a souvenir to a kid. So, and Marchand's like, no, you will not give away a souvenir in my building. So that's kind of what started it, was Marchand being a little crunchy about that, and that led to them kind of having a beef during the game. So fast forward to Jari makes the big save and you know, Marchand, so apparently, and a lot of people said Marchand, just for whatever reason, that he was just in one of those moods where he was already kind of teetering on the edge, and then Jari's down. He goes into the scrum and punches him. Jari's not even looking at him. And so I wonder if when he was waving the glove at him, when he kind of, you know, tried to spear him in the face or the chest or whatever, maybe he was saying, I'm going to give this puck away. I don't know. Maybe that's what he was saying, you know. Marchand, I kind of wonder what would have happened if he wasn't being restrained at the time. But this is my point is, Mike, there's a difference. You and I know the line. Even when we're upset, we're angry, you and I both play the game, even though not at the NHL level, but emotions run high in beer league hockey too. But there's a line you don't cross. Most of us know not to cross it. We all know there's a guy on our team who will cross the line because he doesn't have the self-control. You know that guy. And if you don't know that guy, it's you. That's it. Exactly. That's
right. There's no one like that on my team. Wait a minute. It's me.
Yeah. Mike feels personally attacked right now. But but you know what I'm saying. So but Marchand has repeatedly crossed that line. I mean, the guy's a very good player. He's a first line player in Boston, but I'm just tired of the act.
Yeah, as he has now been suspended. And let's talk in a moment. I want to talk and see if you think 6 games is the correct amount for him. But he has been suspended more than any player in NHL history. That is now his 8th suspension. One more than
Chris Pronger.
Chris Pronger.
And I got that right away. I got that right away.
Boy, you're fast. You're fast. but that's 8 times now. Repeat. Is that the definition of repeat offender? So if that's the definition of repeat offender, right? Most in NHL history.
Yes.
Is 6 games the right amount for what he did? Now, it's a combination. He punches and then the stick afterwards. You have to add that in.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. Look, if a guy has been suspended 8 times, Mike, There is no question in my mind. He has never gotten the message from the league. He has never received the message that what you're doing is wrong. If you're because look, there will be a ninth time. There may be a 10th time, depending on how long he plays. If you have to continue to suspend a guy this much, he is not getting the memo. So no, the discipline you are handing down is not enough, because what is the ultimate goal of suspending a player? Is it just to me, it's sending a message, right? Isn't it?
Saying more than don't just do punishment? This?
Yeah.
You think it's more than punishment? It's stop doing this, not just you're being punished for what you did, right?
Right. That's what you're trying to say. So clearly what they're doing has not been a deterrent. It has never been enough of a deterrent. And I feel this way about a lot of players. But I've always been in favor of harsher player discipline and increased player safety. I think you look at players who they say, well, this guy, he's not a repeat offender. He's never done this before. Well, that's because he's been up for review six times and you've not once suspended him. So, but he's not a repeat offender, but he's been reviewed a bunch of times. I think at some point you have to take the case history into account. And until we actually seriously start sending messages, and here's the thing, if you suspend, now six games hurts the Bruins, but if it's 10, if it's 12, at this point, the team, not because Marshawn may never learn, but the team sits him down and goes, look, you're hurting us big time. And if you don't realize that and you don't understand the effect of what you're doing, figure it out. Because we need you on the ice, not in the press box.
All right. Let me just say something.
Oh, absolutely.
I went to school in Boston. For a while I lived in Rhode Island. I think I have a pretty good sense of Boston Bruin fans, having seen it up close and been around them, played hockey with them. They love this stuff. Come on, Tom.
I know they do.
They love it. You kidding me? In the garden, so to speak, he punches the other goalie in the head. He couldn't buy his own dinner for the rest of his life. They look, you go back to the big bad Bruin years in the 70s, and they still think that that's how hockey should be played. A lot of those fans. He is loved in that town.
Oh, I know.
So if you do that stuff, Tom, and people love you for it, that I don't think you're getting a message that you should stop.
Well, and that's kind of it, isn't it? I mean, isn't that what we're talking about at the end of the day is, guess what? I mean, you're not being punished for anything. You know, you're being encouraged.
Yes, by the fans. Absolutely.
So, okay, so now we run into a real question of now what? You know, are we playing to the fans? Well, yeah, they buy the tickets and whatever, but there's a lot of financials that go into deciding what you're going to do. Of course, Boston will keep Marchand for as long as they can. They're going to, they want to have this guy. They want to have the Bergerons, and we'll talk about Tuukka Rask in a minute, but that's why they held on to Zdeno Chara for so long. Beloved. And that's the way every fan base is. But you're right. They're especially passionate about it in Boston. But they like a rough brand of hockey. Philly fans like a rough brand of hockey. Yeah, like that, kind of that old Adams division, or, you know, the old, that kind of Northeast style. But again, when you're, it crosses the line at some point, and it's just, it's hard to defend for the rest of the league over and over. Because if a guy did that, I'll just pick a random team in Columbus. Then they're probably going to drop the hammer, because who cares about the Blue Jackets, fair or unfair? But do you think?
Oh, I think you're spot on. And I don't think the league wants this too, because this is the stuff that then is, you know, this stuff goes viral. Now, this people get the wrong idea sometime of hockey. They don't understand how the game has changed so much when you show highlights of this kind of stuff, right?
Sure.
Everybody goes, this is hockey. And people, I don't want to watch this stuff. Fans there in Boston love it. I mean, they just go bananas for this kind of stuff. But I don't think the league wants this at all. they don't want this. And, and I think you're right. I think at some point when you're hurting your team, the front office doesn't want this either. They understand it. It sells some tickets. It gets the fans, you know, frothing at the mouth, and they love that stuff in Boston. But if you're in a playoff race right now and you're losing one of your best players for six games, I'll just say this. I know this doesn't matter to anybody else, but my son threw threw his pencil across the room when this came across, because he's on his fantasy team. He's like, another six game. he was so angry. It's his best player too. He's having a pretty good year. But you're hurting your team. You're hurting the league image too. And I'm all with you, Tom, on this, that the only thing, you have to make the punishment severe enough that it stops. That's it. You want to get rid of bench clearing brawls. You made the punishment so severe, it stopped.
Right.
You want to get rid of things, and the NHL has done it. If they wanted to get rid of fighting, they could get rid of it. Yeah. But but this kind of stuff is not good for the league. It's not good for the team. And six games is not enough if you're trying to get rid of it. You got to make this is a 12, 15 game suspension. You go, this is eight times now. Times. You're slashing people in the head. You're punching. Look, the NHL also, this is something that I didn't think about until right now. The NHL is very sensitive right now about head injuries. You can't be punching star goalies in the, even non-star goalies in the head. What if he got a concussion to that, and now he's out for who knows how long?
Right.
So, you can't have blindsided punches to people's head now in the NHL, right?
Yeah.
You just can't.
Yeah, I agree.
So, punishment's got to be 15 games.
All right.
That's it. That's enough. We've seen enough of you. That's eight times now. Enough.
Yeah, I agree. I would probably go 10 or 12, but I would still say yes, needs to be more severe. All right, Mike, let's get to this, because this one's a hot button for me. And I know we've talked about this before. And to me, it's always the argument, is it the Hall of Good, the Hall of Great, or the Hall of Fame? Tuukka Rask, I will be the first to say, it is not a Hall of Famer. Now, here are the stats. 2013-14 Vezina winner, so he did win one. Two-time All-Star. 1920 Jennings winner, which is a team award for lowest goals against. So that, I get it, him and Halak, they were a great tandem. Has a Stanley Cup, but he was not the starter for that Stanley Cup run, but does have a
Thomas. Thomas was, right?
Right. 308 wins, 165 losses, 66, well, just call them ties. Pretty good. 52 shutouts. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Those are good numbers, potentially great numbers, but again, Hall of Famer, where are the standards? I feel like Rask is a guy we should say, awesome career, you were one of the best of your era, and if that's your line for getting in the Hall of Fame, maybe, but I just don't see it. I don't see him as a Hall of Famer.
I bet he gets in. I don't think he deserves. The other thing is, don't retire his number. Boston, you've got enough. There's enough numbers retired. Stop with the retiring numbers. I'm on that tangent again. But don't retire his number. Honor the, bring him back, you know, for a night where you honor him. He deserves that. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but I bet you he gets in.
Interesting. I wonder if he will. Maybe not right
I think
away,
he
but
will.
You know, you might be right. You might be
right. I think he'll get in. I don't think he deserves it. And I certainly don't think he needs his number retired.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a look real quick at the Vegas Golden Knights. I want to talk about what's going on there, because they've had their share of injuries they've been dealing with. But on the cusp of getting Jack Eichel back, all of a sudden Mark Stone has a back ailment that can keep him out for the rest of the regular season, which conveniently frees up long-term IR space if they pop him over, which they most certainly will. Now, the Golden Knights don't have to make a trade. And as you pointed out, this similar strategy kind of used by the Tampa Bay Lightning last year with Nikita Kucherov, The Vegas Golden Knights can employ it this year. Now, that means Eichel will not play with Stone in the regular season.
I know.
But
I know.
That does give them Pacioretty, Stone, Eichel, if they're all healthy, for the first round of the playoffs with no cap ramifications.
Right, and it keeps Riley Smith on the team. I think they had to trade somebody else, too, because he wasn't going to be enough. Because there's a $10 million hit for Eichel, right?
Right, so, right. So you, Smith was $5 million, would have been $5 million of that. And a prorated blah, 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 but, you know.
Right, right. So he was going to go, most likely. I don't, at least, you know, you know that team better than I do. But at least talking with you, reading some stuff, it was going to be I can't think who was the other guy who was going to go. Smith and
well, they could have been Martinez. Alec Martinez is a guy who's making a chunk of change, but I like Martinez.
There was another name.
Playoff
guy. I thought there was another name.
Marchessault. Anybody off that second line could have been Marchessault, Carlson, or
Carlson. I think Carlson was the name I kept hearing was the guy. And again, that's just speculation, of course. But so now you save two guys. And Smith apparently is really good in the playoffs. He's a good playoff guy. That's huge. The only thing that we're cheated out of is and would have loved to have seen Pacioretty, Stone, and Eichel. Everybody thought that was going to be a line combination.
I know.
Maybe the best in the NHL, potentially. And we're not going to get a chance to see it. And for them, they're not going to get a chance. Now, if you're on long-term IR, and I hate to throw this out at you if you don't know the answer, because I don't. I can't remember. Are you allowed to practice with the team?
That's a good one. I don't know if you can practice with the team. I think you have to – well, I guess guys who are getting close to returning can because Eichel's been on IR this whole time, and he's practicing.
Yeah.
He hasn't been activated yet, so yeah.
So those guys. So Stone, you know, when he's healthy next week, he can start. he can start practicing. That line can start practicing together. So I think you can. I think they can practice. It makes sense because they're injured players.
Right.
I just didn't know what the long term IR, if that was different than you're just on the IR in terms of practice.
Well, that's what Eichel's long term IR.
Okay.
And he's practicing with the team. So, you know, he went for the non-contact. Now he's in full contact practice, but he's not active yet. So that's.
But now if Stone gets put on the long term, they can then activate him, right?
Right.
Isn't that the thinking? Okay.
Right.
And so I thought we were going to talk about this, that I thought, I said this on the show last year, I thought there would be governors, general managers, that would implement the Kucherov rule, that you can't do this. I thought there would be enough blowback after what Tampa Bay did, but now I've changed my thinking. And maybe they all went, ooh, that's a good idea, and we can do that. Rather than punishing everybody in the league, they all went, let's put that in the back pocket. We may need that one.
I believe that is more probably the leaning of GMs and of front offices around the league. Maybe not so much owners, but if an owner consults with their front office, they say, look, our ability to stash a guy could be critical, could make the difference. And especially now, because the cap not going up, hockey-related revenue taking a dent, which, by the way, we'll talk about Arizona in a minute in a 5,000-seat barn. we'll get to that. But, you know, that's something that the revenues have been down, the cap has been flat, but these players' salaries are not getting cheaper. And some of these guys pre-pandemic were signed to contracts that ballooned, and now it's getting less and less breathing room as you get closer and closer here. Look, Vegas is going to have to figure something out for next year. If they want all these guys on the ice at once, but for this year, yeah, they can pull the Kucherov. And I think that's probably, Mike, exactly what we're going to see is we're going to see that these general managers and front office, staff say to owners, let's not push for this because it can help us out too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I thought it might be the blowback just because it works so much to Tampa Bay's advantage. They won
really
the cup.
Did. Yeah.
You know, and you know, and then you get one of the best players in without costing you a penny in terms of trade or whatever you had to do. So, Yeah, I guess they just thought, hey, it's that worked there. Maybe we could use that instead of punishing everybody in the league. So
let's face it, the owners that wield the most power are the ones with the most money.
Yeah,
and they're the ones most likely to run into the scenario.
Right. No, of course they're the most powerful, and they're the ones that are helping to steer this ship. So, boy, that is going to be interesting, though. The thing that Vegas has is they're not trying to fight to get into the playoffs, and you lose Mark Stone. So they're going to be okay,
right?
Especially you're adding an Eichel, and the hope is, of course, that he can play at the level that he used to play at. If he can, then you're going to be okay. You're still probably going to finish first in your division, I would think. So it doesn't seem like that risky a move by Vegas to do this, does it?
No, I don't think it is at all. Calgary may finish first. I think Calgary right now is the better team. And I'm not even basing that on their 6-0 drubbing of Vegas on the end of a back-to-back. Sometimes you catch a team, but then they beat the Leafs pretty handily as well. They have it together right now. Calgary looks like they could be the best team in that division, but Vegas is still pretty good. Still pretty good. They've got a deep enough roster that they could make a run. And the whole reason for them to get Eichel was because their scoring disappeared at long stretches in the playoffs the last several years. That's what derailed them every time, is all of a sudden they were in a drought. And the hope is that doesn't happen now. So that's why you bring this guy in. I guess we'll see how it's going to work out. And, you know, we've talked about the goaltending. I don't want to get into the Robin Leonard thing now. We can talk about that later, because I want to move on to a couple other things. Let's get to, speaking of goaltenders, so I do want to give a shout out to Drew Commesso, and you brought this up, Mike, and I thought it was a great point for Team USA. Youngest goalie ever, 19 years old, to play for Team USA, and gets the shutout against China.
Yeah, it's not since, I think, in 28 years, that era, I think it was in Kachuk and, you know, that whole area era. I think they were really young. They were like 17, 18 years old. But you know, since the NHL guys have been allowed to play, you have to. This guy's young. I mean, he's 19 years old. He's a college kid at BU, draft choice of Chicago. What a opportunity. What a wonderful thing for him. And it really, because there's a when the NHL players weren't going to go, this opened up to a lot of possibilities of how do you choose your goaltenders. Right. And for a 19-year-old kid in college to get the nod, that's he must be some goalie. And I researched him a little bit, you know, grew up there in the Boston area. And played some juniors in the area, and you know, then going to BU. So what an opportunity for this kid. And he must be good, because generally college kids, and I know this from having taken my son this past summer to talk to hockey coaches, they won't even look at you generally until you've played a couple of years of juniors before you get to college.
Right.
So for him to be 19, and generally, you know, the kids that are coming into Division I schools are 20, 21 years old when they start, unless you're just a phenom. So this kid must be something special for to be on BU's team as a 19-year-old. He must be some goalie. And he had a shutout in his first Olympic game.
Did. Shout out Team Yipper. But,
Although, did you notice they're not using they changed the names of these guys. It's not Brandon. He's not allowed to be Brandon Yip. They have Chinese names now.
They changed
the names. Yeah, they changed the names of the players.
That's interesting.
And
a lot of people are saying they basically just ported in that KHL team and that's their roster. But
yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. There was actually talk, and I don't want to go too off into the deep end, but there was talk that they weren't even going to let China play because they were afraid they were going to be embarrassed. But then once the pros were not coming, then they said, all right, China, you can play as a host country. So that's how they qualified, by the way. China did not qualify in a world tournament or anything like everybody else. They're the host, so they get to have a team.
I know. I keep telling my son, I said, look, you got to try out because I'm an Irish citizen. He's an Irish citizen. And I said, you can try out for Team Ireland. They have a national team. They've never been in the Olympics, though.
Right.
I said, hey, go over there. Try out for Team Ireland.
What's the worst thing that happens? You have a great experience. The best thing that happens, you're on Team Ireland. That's you never right. know.
I know. Anyway, so congratulations to him. That's cool. Are you watching men's and women's hockey? Do you care? What's your thoughts on it?
I am.
We got to get to other things.
Yeah, I am watching when I can. And as I said to you, I wasn't going to make appointment viewing for the 3 a.m. games or whatever. But I'll watch whether on tape delay or what have you. I try to catch up as much as I can. I'm not watching everything like I was, but I am trying to pay attention in the men to obviously USA and Canada, Team USA women's. I'm trying to watch those games, but I'm not going too far out of my way.
Yeah.
Like I'm not getting up at 3. No. I'll catch the highlights later, you know.
Right.
So that's kind of where I sit about watching and you know, I enjoy other sports too. I like watching the luge and the slalom and snowboarding and you know all that stuff, the freestyle skiing competition. I enjoy that stuff. So.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, good to know. I didn't know whether not having the NHL guys piqued your interest more or less when it came to watching the men's hockey.
I think it's fun. The stories that we're going to hear of these guys like Drew Commesso. I love the stories. That's one of the reasons why I love sports so much is the great stories that are in it. And now we're going to hear a few more about people we don't necessarily know. But yeah, I think that from that standpoint, a storytelling standpoint, far more interesting for me than if NHL guys were in there. I know Patrick Kane. I know his story. Great. Can we tell it for the thousandth time? No. Let me hear about somebody else.
Yeah. No. I agree. What an opportunity to be in the Olympics for these kids. That's it's a fantastic opportunity. And just to lead into one other thing to talk about, because, I enjoy watching women's hockey, is all of a sudden we're starting to see some women more involved in coaching, scouting, analytics in the NHL now. I'm very excited about this. I think, you know what, it's an interesting time in our culture, and I wonder how it's going to work, but we're seeing opportunities for women in the NHL now.
We are. And across sports, Mike, we've seen some, but Cammy Granato, who I know that you know Cammy from your time there in Denver, but she's now the AGM in Vancouver. So, number one, congratulations. But, you know, talking about that hire a little bit, I mean, she's somebody who's been around the game. That family, they're one of the first families of hockey in the United States.
Yeah. That, along with the old chicks, definitely first family in Chicago. I got to know Tony pretty well. And then Cammy would come in and visit, and then she would spend some time with my daughter talking, encouraging her to play. And then also I got to know her a little bit. She was a color commentator, I think, for just 1 year, maybe it was two, with the Kings. And so got to talk to her then, and just couldn't be any nicer. Couldn't be a more, it's just a great family and good for her. She's got hockey knowledge. She's in that area. And she's married now to Ray Ferraro. So what a hockey family that is.
Yeah.
If they had, I think they do have a child now. Imagine the genetics for that hockey player if he or she becomes a hockey player. But congratulations on that. And then I saw too, I just read today, the Flyers are, and no, we're not going to have time to talk about it now, but I'd like to spend some time on a podcast soon talking about the growing part of analytics in hockey. And Flyers just added a couple more people. They're expanding their analytics department, and one of the people that got hired is a woman. Congratulations to her. But at some point, I think we need to spend some time on a podcast talking about analytics in hockey, our thoughts about it, whether it's clearly this is where it's going in hockey and whether that's a good or bad thing. But anyway, the point being, more women are getting involved in the NHL, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely. And so I do want to mention a couple other things that I want to kind of wrap up with here. Sure. Greg Berube gets an extension in St. Louis. And, you know, the Blues have been up and down, but when Berube took over, he took a team that was dead last in the NHL at the beginning of January and won a Stanley Cup with them. Since then, they have definitely been, I don't know if we can call them streaky, but they have been hot, and probably hot more often than they've been cold. But he gets that extension. He gets that vote of confidence from St. Louis. He has that team back again fighting for a division championship. Whereas we look at Edmonton and question the lack of stability there, St. Louis is opting for stability in a guy that they know they clearly like, has some cachet with a local fan base from his playing days. I don't mind this at all. Give the guy the security now to make him feel like, hey, this is his team now and in the future.
Well, I think it also sends that message to the players too. That look, this is the guy, and he is not a lame duck situation. If you know that, you better start playing for him. And it is a team that plays hard at times. Now they had a bad loss last night. I don't know what's going on with Binnington.
He's struggling a little bit.
They didn't look good. They didn't look good last night. So they're you know, but when they are cooking. They're a big team. They're hard to play against. They know how to win, and they're difficult. If Binnington can play well, they're going to be a handful in the playoffs. But boy, he better get going. But I think circling back, the message to the players is this is our guy. He's not going anywhere. No excuses. You know, let's start winning. So, I think it's a smart move. He's proved he can win a Stanley Cup. So, and now the players, know what the message is.
Absolutely. All right. Final thing I want to get to here before we wrap it up. Arizona has been approved. we got to talk about this. Has been approved to play the next three with an option for a fourth season at Arizona State's brand new facility, which is coming online this fall. It's 5,000 seats. The Coyotes must front $20 million in construction costs for an annex, which will really be an NHL annex. It'll be their room, their workout facilities, their training, all that stuff. That's what's going to have to go in there. But Mike, they have to pay the cost up front. They have to write the check. That's part of the contingency here. And Greg Morgan, who's a guy that I know from my time here in Arizona and is a very reliable Coyote source, again, reiterated, underlined, highlighted, this has nothing to do with the Coyotes having any long-term arena deal in place. It is simply their plan for the next 3 to 4 years while they, again, continue to figure things out. I think it's a no-brainer that the Arizona Board of Regents would accept free money and allow the Coyotes to improve the structure. That, to me, is not the surprise here. The surprise is that the NHL seems to be fine with putting a professional hockey team, a National Hockey League team, in a 5,000-seat building.
Yeah.
That's not good optics.
No, it's not. It's not, is it? And, I mean, if you're Arizona State, certainly that makes sense.
Sure.
The only thing you're giving up is maybe you're just going to have to work with the schedule. Because college hockey normally is Friday, Saturday nights when you're home. Right. And you're going to have to dance around that schedule a little bit. That's all that you're losing. Otherwise, look, when they're gone, I mean, they cannot stay there permanently. Right? You wouldn't think. But when they go, they've left you a really nice facility, you know, so it makes all the sense in the world. So you 3 years, you got to juggle your schedule a little bit, but long term, now you've got $20 million poured into Arizona State is still kind of in the baby era of Division I hockey too.
Right.
So this is really nice for them. They're going to have a beautiful facility. And so it makes sense. You can see why they would be okay with it. I'm with you, though. How does this look, though, to the league? When you got teams, now you got, you know, and what if you're not selling it out, too?
Well, and we don't know what ticket prices are going to be. Are they going to try to make up for the shortfall with ticket prices.
How much more can you charge? The ticket prices in NHL are so high now. Yeah, I mean, you're going to double up your prices, triple your prices to make up for 15,000 seats.
And here's the thing. What are the seats that we see now in a 5,000 seat bowl? We're going to see most of them all the time. But the camera angles, Mike, the seats that you see first on any NHL game are the most expensive seats. They're the first five rows. You see them all the time. And if you increase the price of those seats to the point where people don't buy them, whether or not the top 10 rows are packed, if the bottom five are empty, it looks empty.
No, I know. You're now, boy, it's if they now they signed the deal, right? This is going forward. Are they going to have this company has the $20 million to be able to?
That's the thing, is they have to pay the costs up front, because think about this. No one seems to be explaining this. They have to build this annex this summer.
Yeah.
It has to be ready for training camp September. So hurry up and get your shovels in the dirt. Because if you're going to play there in the fall, and that's why I'm waiting to see, are the Coyotes able to just say, all right, here's your $20 million. I know, look, if you own an NHL team, you have deep pockets in other areas. The team is not your cash cow. Clearly, you made your money somewhere else. I get that. But for that money to be plowed immediately into construction costs, which it needs to be, in development and permitting and all the stuff that they have to do to clear this, we haven't even gotten over those hurdles yet.
No, oh, I know. This is, boy, it's it's from the outside looking in, it doesn't seem like a good situation at all, does it? Now, you're also now asking fans who have gone all the way out there to Glendale. Now you're saying, okay, now we're going to be all the way here. I don't know, unless you live there and you understand it. It is not just, I don't know how to, I'm trying to think of how to explain it. Like Phoenix now, I believe, has passed Philadelphia for what, fourth largest city in America now, right? It is difficult to move around. You're asking, and are the fans, is that the area where fans are going to be coming from now?
Yes, that's
what
they wanted to be, is on the east side, because that's where they feel the base is, and the population growth booming on the east side.
I read something that they went to the Suns and said, okay, hey, what about sharing something? And the Suns said to them, we would rather you just leave town. We'd have no interest in sharing anything with you. It'd be better if you just left.
They had their chance to work with the Suns a couple of years ago when the Suns got together with the city of Phoenix, and the Coyotes inquired then, before they were even knew they were going to get kicked out of Glendale, or maybe they knew but hadn't said anything. Mm. They went to the Suns and Robert Sarver and said, can we work with you to do an arena share plan? And the Suns said, no. We want nothing to do with you. And the Suns got their money anyway. They're renovating the downtown arena, and they're it's going to be beautiful on the inside, even though it's an old building. And the Suns, but it's theirs. It's the Suns' building, and the Suns told them to go, you know, pound sand. Then that was a couple of years ago. So when the Coyotes come back to them again this time, even though it's a different ownership group asking again, no, the answer's not going to be any different.
I know. It's not a good situation, Tom, unfortunately. It's just not. And it's a shame. It's a lot of years trying to get that figured out. The only thing I would say is Florida was a lot like this, and they got it turned around. But you better not miss on your draft pick. You better the other part of this equation, Tom, is you are not asking fans to come watch a young, exciting, up-and-coming team. This is a horrific hockey team that you're asking people now to come.
By design.
I know. And it's going to be years, I would think, if at all, that they're going to be any better. That's the problem. It'd be one thing if they were just a young, dynamic hockey team. Let's say they were Florida. And you could almost weather this, but the fact that the team is so bad, it makes it even that much more difficult.
I agree. It's a tall order. We'll see Oh, it's all going to pan itself out. But Mike, you know what? Today was a good show. We covered a lot of
things. Good show today. Yeah, we didn't have those. We didn't have those fans interrupting us with chat.
Gee, all that chat sending us spiraling off into different directions.
We were able to focus on the subjects.
That's right. That's right. So if you are listening in on the podcast ahead of time, we are going to be putting the show up on Sunday night. We'll be running it in the normal time slot, but it is tape delayed, as we've been, you know, announcing throughout the broadcast. So thanks for being here. If you are here and maybe you just don't care about the football game and you wanted to see what Mike and I had to say, we appreciate
that's right.
you being here.
You're one of the two people in America.
That's right. Actually, they're both in Canada, Mike.
That's right. So, that's right. You only care about the CFL.
That's right. That's right. But you know what? Seriously, we do appreciate it. And we really have a lot of fun doing the show. That's why we go out of our way to tape it, just so we can have it on anyway for the Sunday. Mm-hmm. But great stuff. And as always, reach out to Mike at BusterTheDog33 on Twitter. I'm at Callahan on air. We love hearing from you guys. But we'll be back next week live in our normal Sunday night slot. So, Mike, right. Congratulations to the Cincinnati Rams, the LA Bengals, whoever.
Told you they were going to win. I predicted it.
That's right. That's right. Good stuff. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. We will talk to you next week. This has been Talking Buck TV.